This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, we give you an update on ADEPT. Jerry O'Sullivan in. And so what is your official title?
I'm the Chief of Regional Business Operations, Kyle.
So you have been there for how many years now?
13.
And obviously a lot going on in the whole field. Well, really in all the areas that ADEPT covers. And maybe why don't we dial that out first? Just talk about how broad ADEPT is and all the different areas you reach into.
Yeah, I'll do my best to cover that. We provide services across four counties, Douglas, Josephine, Coos, and Curry. And we started out as addiction treatment over 50 years ago. And since then, we developed a number of different programs that serve that area. But then in 2006, the team decided that they really needed to make sure to have a medical presence. And so they established a primary care clinic. Back, it was called South River back then. Today, it's part of ADEPT Integrated Healthcare. And then in 2015 and 16, we had the opportunity to become the Community Mental Health Program, which sounds pretty simple, but it's a very complex program for mental health services. And then we've added a number of different things, including housing and some outreach. So a lot of work going on.
And talk about, navigating all those services through a pandemic and to whatever point we want to consider at ourselves being at now. What's this last year been like?
Yeah, well, and I think about the pandemic, I think about the last 3 years, and I think no matter what business you're in, that whole experience probably changed everything for everybody in every sector, and it certainly affected us in a big way. It was difficult to get people to come in and work and staff up at the same time, especially in the last year and a half or so. We had more resources than we'd ever have because of all the money flowing through different grant opportunities. But then we couldn't hire the people. And so that started to change here probably about 8 or 9 months ago. We adjusted some things. We've always had a really generous benefit package and a lot of supports for our staff, but we were able to step that up a little bit more. And I think the workforce is changing so that people were starting to come back in and look for actual work again.
What is the impact? What do you see the impact of those services that you guys offer as making over the last few years?
Well, there's so many different pieces. I think every time I try to talk about this, I'm leaving somebody out because every team has really seen different ways to have an impact on the health in Douglas County or in the other four counties, other three counties we're in. So I think that when we look at the pandemic and how it affected crisis services and the number of calls that we're dealing with, this was a huge shift and change, and it hasn't gone away, even though the pandemic has really started to wind down in a lot of ways. We still see more crisis calls than we ever did before.
And is there a lot of these situations where it's more than one factor? It's mental health, but substance use, misuse as well?
Yeah, I definitely think there's an overlap a good percentage of the time. And it's complicated situations, and so that really defines crisis calls. Often it's almost never simple.
Now, you mentioned staffing levels and working to get those increased. For some of the areas, I know there's a wide variance depending on what service somebody's providing, but some of these folks are coming in from other places, I imagine, and what's it like to work to get them here?
That's the interesting piece, is a lot of the recruiting for the positions we've been adding, not all of them, but a lot of them are people from outside the state. And one of the things we have to be cautious about as we're bringing people in is that they understand what they're moving into. So in the four counties we serve, each one's a little different, but they're all very rural. And so one of the things we're looking for is to make sure that the person we're recruiting or that their family doesn't have an expectation that they're going to be, you know, an hour away from downtown Portland or some major sporting event or a cultural event. So that's one of the things that we've really, really honed in on, is making sure that they're a good fit for the community.
And are there, because there are other areas where we see shortages, people opting out of, shall we say, more stressful careers for things that maybe pay similarly but are able to, you know, just walk away from at the end of the day and not worry about. Is that whole, in the mental health field especially, or in addiction treatment, is that an issue?
It's a huge issue. It was a dynamic, especially after the first year of the pandemic. I think that burnout and all of the crisis issues people deal with in their daily life added to that. And so one of the things that we've done is try to make sure that we're supporting the people that we have, trying to minimize that burnout. Even in that, I think people still opted out or opted to change their priorities. What we're seeing, I think, in the last 8 months is that work has become a priority. And when we're recruiting, we're looking for people who have a passion for the work. That really helps with burnout. We have to help them have good balance, life balance, with the work that they're choosing to do. But having people that are passionate for serving the people we serve is probably the most important piece for being successful.
So with all this going on, talk about the funding streams. Of course, there's been the infusion from the federal level tied to the pandemic, but what about other streams as well?
Yeah, well, there's all those funding streams that started out at the beginning of the pandemic that helped support workforce and our local CCO, which is a coordinated care organization that manages OHP funds. They've been tremendously supportive throughout the pandemic to help us make sure that we never had to worry about laying off staff, even when services maybe weren't as in high demand, especially early in the pandemic. Some services went up, others went down. I think since then what we've seen is a more systematic approach. So from the federal level, there's a number of federal agencies that fund healthcare in some way. They've been pushing out money at record levels for the last 3 years. And at the state level, it's Oregon Health Association is probably the main source of funding that we see coming through to us. And what they've been trying to do is figure out how to take the money that it comes down from the federal government, comes to the state, the legislature's involved in making some decisions about priorities, and then trying to find ways to get that to us. There's lots of different ways that they're doing it, and it's created a lot of opportunity to increase resources and some new staffing types that we haven't had before.
Now, as the federal pandemic emergency essentially comes to an end at this point in May, is there a concern that over the next year, some of those funding streams are going to drop off?
Well, I think we certainly will see that. They can't contain that fund or continue that funding level indefinitely. I also think there will be some changes to the rules that were made more simple during the pandemic and really eliminate a lot of barriers. As they start to roll those back, those barriers are going to start becoming evident again. What we're hoping for is that there'll be some long-term change in some of those rules.
Now, what about newer things that you've had going on in the last year or two?
There's a lot. So we developed a sobering center with the community. We didn't do this by ourselves. We had stakeholders and partners, cities and law enforcement, the county, the CCO have all been involved in helping support that work, and we were able to get that operating. It's been operating for about a year and a half now. But we've had some other opportunities too. We have a couple of housing projects that will help with people who are unhoused and have a behavioral health issue of some type. Those are right here in Roseburg, so we're excited to see those things take off. And I think one of the big resources that we're seeing pay off for us right now are peers. So we've always had peers. These are people with lived experience to support people who are getting some kind of treatment, mental health or addictions. But they've always been tied to an existing service. So it helps people after they walk in the door, after they decide they need to get some care and they're willing to come in and start the process. The new piece is now we're seeing outreach peers. In each county that we serve, we have these outreach peers, 26 in total. 9 of them are here in Douglas County. And they're going out and finding people who may need the service and working with them before they have decided to come in for treatment to help build some rapport, understand what their needs are, connect them to services, and move them forward. It's actually been very successful. It's not like everybody is jumping on the bandwagon to do that, but a surprising number of people are doing things like connecting to various types of healthcare services. Some are getting employment, working on really trying to stabilize their lives. So that's been very encouraging.
Well, and it would seem like it's a lot of work to go out in that direction, but for those people who have got either housing or a combination of issues, to have somebody actually showing concern is something they probably don't always feel like they've gotten a lot, and that probably makes them receptive to some of the ideas that, you know, they're given.
Yeah, a lot of times one of the first barriers is their own willingness to put themselves out there and walk in the door. A person who's unhoused walking into an agency and actually sitting down and asking for services or trying to figure out how to afford or get the benefit for services is a huge barrier. These are people that are struggling just to survive, and so they aren't thinking about these kind of higher level thinking processes. This outreach opportunity really creates that chance for the peer to learn about them, to learn their priorities, learn their issues and barriers, and really help reassure them that they can find a way, that there are some benefits that will help them, that these services are available at no cost in many cases. And that has made all the difference.
All right, we're going to take a break. More when we come back. Jerry O'Sullivan from ADAPT, the interview, a podcast at 541radio.com, 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Later, part of KQE and Local Talk at 4, we'll get an update on Thrive Umpqua, Juliet Flinches, and on tomorrow's program, Jerry O'Sullivan here from ADAPT, talking about a lot of things that they are going through right now and some of the newer things. What about the expansion of the mobile crisis services? People have really seen that. Visually, it feels like it's ramped up a lot with the vehicles out there. Of course, the folks who were out there doing the work before, some of the vehicles were necessarily around, but it's very visible right now.
It's a lot more visible, Kyle, and we've added to the size of the teams, and they're more available throughout the day and even into the night. So I think the key is to make sure that service is available as necessary 24/7. That's what we've been shooting for. That's been our goal for a while. We've worked with grant opportunities. We've worked with stakeholders. Roseburg Police Department and City of Roseburg have been instrumental in helping us get grants to help build that team over time. And we've had some federal grants that help with that, too. So it's a very exciting work, and we're definitely seeing a lot of payoff for that.
Well, and, you know, initially, as some of this stuff started to evolve, I wondered what, you know, what law enforcement would, you know, what their take would be. Yet some of them have pointed out the fractional amount of training they get in mental health and some of those things compared to what a trained professional does. And it's clear that it's really a team effort.
It is a team effort. And it took time to really develop that level of trust that we've worked together for years. But as we become come in with more and more resource, what we've been able to do is to use that trust in order to provide more services. So they're co-deployed in many cases to calls where there is likely a mental health or a substance use issue. And they're even deployed on their own when it's clear there isn't a safety issue. And that was a big deal to be able to get to that point. And it's worked out really well for both us and law enforcement.
What about taking what's been going on here? I mean, is this, I don't know where all of this started, but are people looking at what is going around this area and starting it elsewhere?
Well, and we use models, right? So we aren't developing this on our own. There is a model up in Lane County called the CAHOOTS model, where they've had this going on for some time. A team of people that respond with a very visible van. They're known in the community. They visit people who are unhoused, and so they have some trust that they build over time. And that's what we're working on too. And the thing that I think helps us is that by having that model, we have an idea of how the pieces fit together. We can show that to law enforcement. Law enforcement can talk to law enforcement in those communities and build trust, not just from us, but also in understanding the model.
Talk about behavioral health housing and what you're hoping to do there.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that has been a challenge for us really forever is that if a person is dealing with a housing issue, we call that it's one of those social determinants of health. That may be a term that people have heard. It's one of those issues that's not directly health related, but it gets in the way if it doesn't exist. Housing is one of those. So if you imagine a person who needs to go to treatment, they go into a residential program, which is 24/7, all the housing's included, but it only lasts for a short time. And then they come out of that and they transition to an outpatient program. Now they have no housing. They're starting this new life. They're trying to be sober or stay away from issues, or maybe they're receiving some mental health services. And now they're having to deal with all the same issues around housing, and they're going to get pulled back into those unsafe situations where all those things are happening that led them down that path. And so if we can provide housing for them as part of that transition, maybe for 6 months, maybe 12, even 18, they're more likely to develop resources to be on their own, become self-sufficient, and be stable in their recovery, which is the goal. And we've seen this play out. Without that, the likelihood that they'll drop off is much higher, and they'll give up on the process.
Talk about the crisis resolution rooms.
Crisis resolution rooms. This is doesn't have any billing tied to it or anything. It's a service that we see as a gap service. So we have a person who maybe comes out of the sobering center. They say, yeah, I'd like to get treatment. We just need to get them into a residential facility. Could be ours or someone else's, but there isn't a bed available. And we can't keep them at the sobering center. And if we put them back out, they're going to go right back into where they were before, and maybe they'll lose their motivation. Motivation goes away very quickly. So these are managed by our crisis team. There's a couple of them available. They're not online yet. They'll be online probably next month. And it's like a little motel room. They can stay there for up to 23 hours. They can get a shower. They can get sleep. They can fix a meal for themselves. And when a bed comes available, they're ready to go.
Now, one of the things that I think is tied, if I'm correct, to the sobering center, at least in that general vicinity, is this idea of a regional recovery campus with other things going on.
Yeah, so we currently have a facility that has 32 beds. That provides 24/7 residential treatment for a person with addictions. Included inside that facility is a detox facility. So 11 of those 32 beds is for detox. That's getting a person through that detox period of getting off of drugs that lasts 3 to 7 days. Sometimes it's even dangerous to go through that process. But the problem is there isn't enough capacity in the whole state on residential beds. And so we have a waiting list for that next step in the process, those 21 beds of residential. So we've purchased some property, we've obtained some funding, and we're working on building a new campus that will have 16 beds of detox and 64 beds of residential. That'll include a little different programming, so still a men's unit and a women's unit, but also a parenting unit and a co-occurring unit, which will be for people who need mental health treatment at the same time they're getting treatment for addiction.
Now, it sounds like this is something that would have to be staffed 24/7?
Both programs are staffed 24/7, yeah, absolutely. And the detox is a nurse-administered program, and then the residential is administered by counselors, and they have what they call RA staff, or residential assistants, who work with the residents 24/7.
Now, for this recovery campus, what kind of time frame are you hoping for?
We're hoping to break ground on the first phase this year. That would be the detox and the hub building, which includes the kitchen and all the support services, intake processes, the main building, and then the cottages, which would be these residential cottages where the 64 beds would reside, would be phase two. And as a third phase, which may not be third because the funding may come in quicker than the others, is we want to develop some recovery housing for people after treatment, 50 or 60 units of places where people live for 6, 12, 18 months during that early recovery.
Wow, a lot going on. How do you take care of the people that are working for you?
We take care of the people because the people are really the program. So if the secret sauce is to success in programs like this is having great people who do the work, and a lot of that comes from from their motivation to do the work. They're empathetic to the people we treat, and they're sold out for our mission, which is about providing all these services to the community the best way we can.
So do you have things in place to just kind of check up on them and make sure they're doing okay?
Yeah, they get supervision, they get support, they have great resources available through our through their employment package. They have paid time off, they have sick time, and of course we try to make sure that they're getting a decent rate of pay and support in that way. And they also have some support services through our EAP program, which offers some counseling that's independent from the agency but provided for them so that we're not involved in the process, but they can get to that on their own.
A lot going on. Jerry Sullivan from ADEPT, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle. I appreciate it.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.